You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Coming up on episode 23 of the RedCafe.net podcast, we look at the 1-1 draw with Birmingham at the weekend. We have all the regular features, including player and cabbage of the week, plus the inception of CAF Countdown. We also have a Burnley fan joining us to look ahead to the weekend's fixture.
Welcome to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net. Or alternatively, post your opinion on the RedCafe.net forums.
Well, welcome to episode 23 of the RedCafe.net podcast. Dan and Dov join me as they always do. How are you this week, guys?
Very well, thanks, Steve. How are you?
Not too bad. Bit of a cold, as you might be able to tell. But,
you're always having a cold, you.
I do have the occasional cold, I must admit. Dov, you okay?
Yeah, I'm not bad. Steve, it's not, sorry, Dan, it's not his fault he gets a cold.
Exactly.
He doesn't say, hey, can I have the cold, please?
He's just a southern softy, that's what it is.
Oh, dear, Dan.
That's terrible, Dan. That's slander.
I'll inform my lawyers after the show. But let's crack on with looking at the Birmingham game first, guys. The 1-1 draw on Saturday. Well, Dan, Ferguson said he was pretty satisfied with the point in the end, and considering they were 12 games unbeaten going into it, it's not a bad result at all, is it?
No, I think a draw was fair enough, really. I mean, United were on top in the first half until Birmingham scored. Just couldn't create our chances that we created. And in the end, it's always pleasing to take a draw when you're losing. But we've got to be going to St Andrews and winning, really, if we want to be picking up the title. I know Chelsea drew there and City drew there as well. And it's a tough place to go, but I think we should be beating teams like Birmingham, really.
Dov, another standout performance from Thomas Kuszak again, making some pretty crucial saves. We've mentioned earlier in the past that we think Kuszak's done enough to sort of earn the right, hasn't he, really, to claim the number one jersey. Van der Sar, obviously, so much experience and likely will come back into the side when he returns, but what does it say for the future of Ben Foster? I mean, you must be wondering, will he ever get another chance, considering that Kuszak's been performing so well?
Well, I think the latest rumours are that he's going to get sold, possibly in January, to cement a place in the World Cup. But I think Kuszak stepped up to the plate. There's something that Ben Foster couldn't do. I think every time Ben Foster played, he looked shaky. He looked kind of lacking in confidence a bit, and really, like, decision-making wasn't really the best, and he's especially vulnerable when the ball gets played to his feet. So, to be fair, I won't be particularly sad to see him go. I know you're quite a big fan of his, but he's never really impressed me his time at the club.
Dan, what about Park? I mean, there seems to have always been a sort of a divide between United supporters. I mean, there's those that think he really doesn't bring much to the team other than the sort of hard work and effort that he puts in. And then there are others that see the contributions that he does make. What's your stance on Park? And he didn't really contribute a great deal against Birmingham, but longer term, do you think he's still a decent player to have around?
I think he comes into his own when we're playing away from home, especially in Europe, when we've got to defend teams. I mean, if you go into the Emirates or Stamford Bridge, you know, Barcelona, Inter Milan, you want Park in your team just to shore it all up a little bit. But I mean, at home, I mean, he's played a few games this season. He's not done anything. He can't beat a player. His passing's average. He's no pace, really. But saying that, he's been unlucky, because against Hull, he was the one who forced the own goal from Dawson. And obviously at the weekend, he was behind Dan as well, wasn't he? So he could have had two goals there if the defenders were in the way. And then we wouldn't be saying this, you know, this wouldn't happen in the same argument, would we?
To be fair, it was horrible. Absolutely horrible.
Yeah, but to be fair, he's in the right places at the right time if he's putting pressure on defenders and turning the ball into their own net. I mean, and that's not a reason for him to be in the team, of course, but I mean, he's been unlucky at the fact that the chances haven't landed to him.
Yeah, but the thing is as well, is that he's, like we said, like, he can't shoot. For me, he's got, he's there, like you say, to do a job away from home, to like stop an attacking player playing. But going forward, as an attacking threat, I think he's null and void.
So are you saying his career is over at United? Like,
it's not over. I think he's got a part to play, but I just think, like, as an attacking threat, I just don't think he's anything. If you're Barcelona, we put Park Ji-sung in the lineup. for a Champions League final, they're not going to think, oh no, Park Ji-sung, we better put two men on him. They're just going to think, yeah, who cares, that'll be fine.
I think he's a decent player, but like I say, he's no real standout qualities that'll ever make him one of the world's best. And you're right about the Barcelona thing. They'd always think about what they can do to a team rather than how to stop somebody else. So it's a tough one, but I think we should keep him, really.
Okay, well, Dov, a debut for Mamie Diouf. Good to see him getting involved, wasn't it? And I suppose, is that a sign that in the future he could be given a lot more sort of football, especially when you consider what Berbatov, we've heard that he might need surgery on a knee injury as well. That could open the door for him, couldn't it?
Could do. I'm a bit, they're not apprehensive, but I don't understand why. Obviously, he's just came over from Norwegian football, where he did score a stupid amount of goals. But then you've got players like Welbeck and Makeda, and even Michael Owen, who are just sitting there waiting for a chance. And then this guy's came in and got on straight away. And Michael Owen was on the bench at the weekend. What must he be thinking? Like, really? He must be just... His confidence must be completely shattered. He's got no chance of going to the World Cup now at all. I mean, he must be pretty much regretting moving to Old Trafford now, because all he's done is sit on the bench.
Nah. Dove, it shouldn't matter about what Michael Owen wants to do regards to the World Cup. Ferguson's got to do what's best for United, and if he thinks Diouf is going to have more impact on a game than what Owen will do, then you bring Diouf on. I mean, Owen's going to get his chances, especially now, like Steve just mentioned, with Berbatov, you know, possibly being out for like 3 or 4 months with his surgery. Owen's going to get chances. There's no way that he's not going to play Michael Owen.
You think? I mean, Owen, there's been plenty of chances in the last couple of weeks to play Michael Owen, and he's not done it. And even at the weekend... You would think, right, we'll bring on Michael Owen, he's a proven goal scorer, etc., what all the media say. And I think one of the reasons he actually came here was to get into the World Cup squad, because he wants to be on that plane to South Africa.
Well,
and he's
Ferguson
not getting
would have told him. When Ferguson sat down with Owen, he'd have told him, he'd have said, listen, I'll give you a game, so you've got a chance. But, I mean, to be honest, we've discussed this before. If Hull come in for you or Man United, who are you going to go to? You're always going to go to Man United, regardless of how many games you're going to play. He'll definitely get his chances. I've no doubt about that. There's still half a season left. Big games coming up.
Dan, how would you sort of answer the fact that we played 4-5-1? Safi and Ben Zaire on the emails, he can't understand why we played that system against a newly promoted side. He said he did appreciate that Birmingham's decent form. You have to respect them. But why wasn't Michael Owen starting?
Why do you have to respect them? Why do you have to respect them? I don't understand this thing.
Because they're 12 games unbeaten. And
so what? Let's go out and beat their, you know, let's knock them off the stride.
Conceded 5 goals at home all season before we played them. You can't just go there and go all guns blazing.
Yeah, but how many have they scored, Steve? They've neither scored a handful, have they? You know,
and well, I agree.
Why do we have to go so defensive against Birmingham? I mean, come on, we should be going there. We're Man United, we should be going there, attacking them. You should always be confident in Man United scoring more goals than the opposition.
I agree, that's my question. Why wasn't Michael Owen starting alongside Rooney?
Apparently he can't play alongside Rooney, can he? But I don't see why they can't play together.
What about Welbeck?
Well, he's got to start playing better, hasn't he, in the games that he has played in. I mean, there's no better game to play than Leeds. And he played against Sunderland and didn't play very well there either. I know,
he's getting played on the wing though, Dan.
Yeah, no,
he's getting played on the wing, he's a striker.
The one game that Welbeck's played this season where he's looked alright, he played up front against Wolves and he looked alright. I agree there. I do agree with that. He shouldn't be playing on the left-hand side. But, I mean, is he ready just to be thrown into a game against Birmingham? But Diouf is, so sometimes you've just got to question what Ferguson does.
Any complaints with the Darren Fletcher red card, Dan?
Not really. I think it weren't so much cynical, but it was clumsy, the second card especially. The first one was definitely a yellow card. But the second one, I can see where Ferguson's coming from. It was a tad bit harsh, but I mean, I think it was some sort of like clocking up procedure. Klattenberg just had enough of him, I think, all game, whinging at him. Well, so he says anyway.
Okay, well, before we move on to the emails, guys, just the main bit of news to come out from Old Trafford today about the finances. I mean, we were talking about it last week, but let's revisit it a little bit this week. You've probably seen we've announced pre-tax profits of 48.2 million, but that figure does include the 80 million sale of Cristiano Ronaldo. So are you worried looking at that, guys? I mean, the club have also confirmed we're looking to raise 500 million through bonds to sort of help refinance the debt at the club. And the really worrying statistic is that we paid out 41.9 million in interest on a loan of 509.5 million. So the figures are a bit worrying, aren't they? But do you look at it and sort of think, well, this bond might help things, or... Still long term, there are still sort of doubts over the whole financial thing and the whole Glazer control of the club.
It's worrying to see like the article that I read sort of took away the Ronaldo transfer fee, and it was like we made a £31 million loss I think that sort of says, oh, when we're announcing profits and things like that with the Ronaldo transfer fee. And really, although Sir Alex says that there's money to spend, I doubt there's very much money to spend. There's an atmosphere around the club at the minute, and it's one I don't like. And there's a lot of talk about the finances and things like that, and I'm starting to get a little bit worried, to be honest.
Yeah, I'd echo those sentiments. I think the fact that we are in a bit of trouble. In United, for them to move forward, they need to still be signing the best players in the world or rely on the youth system. And we can't really buy those best players, can we? You know, if we're competing with the likes of Chelsea and City and obviously Real Madrid as well, we're just going to get blown out of the water, really. I said to a colleague at work before that in 10 years' time, I wouldn't be surprised if we ended up like Liverpool are now, like, you know, just struggling to make a decent season for themselves, which might be a bit pessimistic, but it's a reality, isn't it, if things go the same way.
Well, moving on to the email section of the show now. We'll start with Chris in Dublin. With it being the January transfer window, he sort of wondered whether we've lost our appeal to be able to attract the best players in the world. Chris cites signings such as Valencia as being good signings, but at the end of the day, not world-class marquee signings. So, Dan, would you agree with that we've sort of lost our appeal in the transfer market?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, a lot of the foreign players would love to join Real Madrid rather than come to Manchester United. It's a bit of a glamour club, isn't it, and all that, a lot of Galacticos and everything else. But I don't see any. I mean, we should have the same amount of pulling power as those big clubs, really. It just depends. I mean, Ferguson has to persuade them to come to Manchester for one, where it's always raining, as opposed to Madrid, where it's, you know, generally sunny.
Snowing. It's snowing in Madrid at the weekend.
It did snow. I saw the game, yeah.
But if you're a young player and you look at what happened to Cristiano Ronaldo at the club, he came to the club, no one had really heard a great deal about him, and then he developed into being the best player in the world. So surely any young prospect would look at that and think, God, it's got to be the best club to be at.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with you on that sense of it. You know, if you're young, you'll get a chance under Ferguson at United, because that's the policy, isn't it, really? You know, they'll play the young players as much as they can. But then you've always got the problem what we had with Ronaldo is, you know, his dream move is always to move on to Real Madrid or do this and do that. So you'd only get a certain amount of time with that one player, whereas if you bought, say, an English player, they might want to stay in England throughout the career and be at a big club like United, as opposed to, you know, spending loads of money on, I don't know, Benzema, for instance, you know, spending 30 million on him.
It's a good
thing. Sorry, Steve, if you get somebody in like Benzema, like you say, Dan, they might decide after 2 or 3 years they want to leave. But if you've got somebody like Rooney, they'll stay for the career.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. I mean, that's why I think we should look towards the youth team at United. I mean, there's a few standout performers, but there's no one really who's ready to properly break through, is there, really? And that's why, you know, you go for a safe option like Valencia. I don't think that if we lost Valencia in 3 or 4 years, that it would be a massive, massive loss to the club, as what it was with Ronaldo leaving. So you can always replace players like him, but you can't replace Ronaldo. So that's why he's gone safe, I think.
It's interesting, though, like, to think someone like Frank Ribery, he said he wants to get his future sorted out before the World Cup is over. Now, as United fans, we look at that now. Probably Ribery, United won't be at the top of his list. Like you say, Dan, it'd probably be Real Madrid, closely followed by someone like Barcelona. It's a sign of how things have changed, because a few years back you'd have thought Ribery, United would probably be pretty high up there, and it's just what has happened to have changed so much. I mean, we've been in consecutive Champions League finals, won 3 consecutive Premier League titles as well. It's just, why are players not interested anymore? I just can't really understand it.
But do you think it's got something to do with the fact that, you know, obviously Ferguson's nearing an age now where he's possibly going to retire in the next few seasons, and if you offered Frank Ribery a four or five year contract, will Ferguson be around in that time? Until we're clear on when Ferguson can manage the club until then, I don't think the big players will want to risk signing a big contract.
Could it be the lack of sort of star-studded players that are in that side at the moment? Because it's very much a team side, isn't it? Wayne Rooney is sort of the big marquee player, isn't he? You look at the likes of...
Well, he's the only one, really. He's the only one who's probably known throughout the world for being Wayne Rooney. So, yeah, so, no, you're
certainly
right.
In an attacking sense, anyway, yeah.
What about Dimitar?
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously known around the world, Dov, as you know, because he's a quality footballer. But he's not the same name as Wayne Rooney, is he?
But then, like, how much of a marquee signing is Wayne Rooney? Because I'm starting to get into the impression, I know you're, like Dan, you've mentioned before, you're not really his biggest fan. I'm starting to get the impression a bit too much hype around the boy.
Oh, he's world class. I'll defend Wayne Rooney to the end.
You can defend him as much as you like, but the amount of chances that he misses. It's unbelievable for a striker who's meant to be, you know, as you proclaim yourself, you know, to be world class.
Every striker misses his chances. Oh, look at Torres. He's going through a bit of a patch where he's not been scoring a great deal. Yeah, he got the winner against Villa. But other than that, he's not been fired.
To be fair, I feel more confident when Torres is running through one-on-one than I do with Rooney.
Oh, yeah, he's a better one-on-one finisher.
Instinct-wise, I don't think Rooney has got that mental attitude. But yeah, I think he's obviously I'm not doubting he's a great player, and he's probably more creative though. He's not really an out and out striker like Torres is.
So you wouldn't call him world class?
No, I wouldn't. I've been saying this for a few years now, and every time I say it, people laugh at me. But we'll soon see, won't we? You know, I just think that he does bring a lot to the table, and he's a great player. I'm not doubting that. He probably will become one. You know, to be a world class player when he's like 26, 27. But at the moment, I think he's got a scrub up on his finishing, especially, and his positioning as well. He's got to like learn to try and, you know, be disciplined and stick in his position that he's meant to be playing.
Okay, well, we'll move on to an email from Dan from Chorley. He wants to know what's going on with Owen Hargreaves. The talk was that he'd be back in October, wasn't it, guys? And we've heard very little since then, other than the fact that he's going to be close to a return. Dov, do you see him coming back this season? And if he does, do you think he can sort of make an immediate impact?
I think he will come back this season at some point. I don't think he'll make a massive impact because he's been out for a bit too long. So I think he'll get a couple of games in the first team, play some reserve football, I think, as well, basically to get his fitness up and to get ready for next season. Again, you wouldn't want to rush him back too quickly either, because if you do, then you could get a reoccurrence of the injury, and then God knows how long he'd be out if that was to be the case. So I think he'll get a few games, but I think he's... recovery and introduction to the team will be slow and basically steady to make sure nothing goes wrong at all.
Is Hargreaves not a naturally fit lad though, Dov? And considering he's probably worked doubly hard to get himself back this time, if he does turn out first couple of games and he doesn't get any sort of recurrence of the injury, then is there nothing to suggest that he can go on and play to the end of the season now?
If he's naturally, it's all good being naturally fit, but if he's naturally fit and made of glass, then that's not really good for anybody.
I think he's finished. I can't see him coming back to where he was, which makes you again question Ferguson's decisions. He knew he was injured. He's been injured a lot by Munich. And then we end up paying 18 million for someone who's played, he's not even played 30 games for us, has he?
It's about 25 games over the 2 years. Yeah.
All right. He's played relatively well in the games he has played. He was important when we won the Champions League, for instance, and that free kick he scored against Arsenal as well. So yeah, he is a quality player, but I mean, it'll be his mental side of it now. I think he's fit in terms of physically now, but it'll just be his mental side of it. You know, if he goes into a 50-50, the same as that. Maybe how Alan Smith was. I mean, Alan Smith's not come back to the player, you know, half the player he was.
In Fletcher and Hargreaves, have you got essentially two very similar players as well?
Well, you have, but I mean. That's no bad thing, playing away from home, you know, or if you're playing against a team like Arsenal, for instance, you know, you can get in and about them, and they've still got the sufficient passing ability to play their way out of trouble anyway. They're obviously not as creative as players like Anderson, people, and Carrick in the middle, but they can definitely play together.
You're listening to the redcafe.net podcast.
Okay, well, we'll move on to the features of the week now, guys, and we'll start with the cabbage and player of the week. Dov, I'll start with you. Offer up your player of the week for this week.
Player of the week would be Evra. I think Evra was the most consistent performer, always puts in a decent performance, and was probably the best player at the weekend as well, and sort of kind of contributed towards the goal. So he's my player of the week.
I agree with you there, Dov, for all those reasons. Dan, how about you for player of the week this week?
I thought Valencia played well again. He's steadily becoming our most consistent performer this season now.
Cabbage, Dan?
I think I would have to go for Fletcher purely because he got himself sent off.
Dov?
I'm going to go with Park Ji-sung. I thought he was ineffective. He looked terrible when he was going to shoot. Actually, he wasn't even going to shoot, but he was thinking about it. It just looks terrible. And I don't think he did anything positive in the game at all.
For me, it's between Carrick and Fletcher. I just think both of them were sort of on the periphery of the game. And the fact that Fletcher got sent off as well for two silly yellow cards, really. Going to give it to him. Right, well, we'll move on to Dov's Legends profile now. Who have you got for us this week, Dov?
Well, Steve, I'm bringing it right back into the 90s. I've got a very special player, and one of my favourite players. It is Andrew Alexander Cole, or more commonly known as Andy Cole, but not after the year 2000 when he wanted to be known as Andrew Cole. So here we go. It is Andy/Andrew Cole. First, he was born on the 15th of October 1971 in Nottingham, and that's in England for those of you out with the United Kingdom. He started his career playing for Arsenal, started his career in the youth team there, only made one appearance for them, and that was against Sheffield United at Bramall Lane in 1990. But it was after that, he was like loaned out to Fulham, managed 13 games for them, scored 3 goals, and then Bristol City swooped in to sign him for £500,000, which at the time was the record signing. At Bristol City, basically proved himself a great goal scorer, and in 41 appearances he managed 20 goals and caught the attention of Newcastle United, who at the time were leading the old Division 1. So they signed him in February 1983 for a club record of £1.75 million. And then his first 12 games, he scored 12 goals, and Newcastle were subsequently promoted to the Premier League. Manager Kevin Keegan at the time, he brought in Peter Beardsley after Newcastle were promoted, and the strike partnership was very fruitful for Cole. And 40 games during the first Premier League season, he managed 34 goals. Newcastle finished third, qualified for the UEFA Cup, and in all competitions scored 41 goals. So a great start to his top flight career there. That season he was also voted the PFA Young Player of the Year as well. Following season, he played 18 games for Newcastle, scored 9 goals, and that brought him to the attention of Sir Alex Ferguson, who on January the 10th, 1995, struck a deal worth £7 million. It was £6 million cash, plus Keith Gillespie, remember him? He was rated at £1 million. And this at the time was the most expensive British transfer. It was actually broken by Dennis Bergkamp signing for Arsenal for £7.5 million, and that happened 5 months later. Despite joining through halfway through the 94-95 season, Cole actually managed to score 12 goals in 18 league games. In this time, everybody will remember the 5 he managed to put past Ipswich Town in the 9-0 victory, which is a Premier League record. But this season will be remembered mostly for the game against West Ham, last day of the season. Cole missed a few chances, and basically if we won the game, we would have won the league. And unfortunately, it went to Blackburn because we only drew 1-1. We also played in the FA Cup that year. Cole was cup tied, but we lost that as well. So it wasn't a really good end to the season for Andy Cole. The next season was his first full season with us, and Eric Cantona, who was coming back from his ban, the side was getting built around him, so Cole kind of struggled. People were saying that he was rubbish, he needed lots of chances to score, etc, etc, etc. But he managed to score 14 times that season as well. Also, he won the double that season with us, so wasn't all bad. The next season, 96-97, we'd actually been in for Alan Shearer as a possible replacement for Andy Cole, but instead signed Ole Solskjaer. So obviously Cole's getting some more competition there, and unfortunately for him that season he suffered 2 broken legs in a reserve team game against Liverpool. So obviously like this wasn't really it wasn't a successful season, maybe it's that it really hampered his chances. But in that season he still managed to play 20 games and scored a goal in the UEFA Champions League against Porto, which was voted the best European goal. So I go and check that out on YouTube, it's magnificent. He also scored the goal that sealed the title away to Anfield, and that was just half a season, like 6 months after his broken legs as well, suffering his broken legs. So it was a fantastic end to the season for Cole there. Following season, 1978, Eric Cantona retired and Andy Cole was the number one striker. That year, Terry Sheringham was brought in, and well, Andy Cole and Terry Sheringham, they developed a great partnership on the field, but they didn't really speak. In fact, they didn't like each other. Basically, this happened in a match against Bolton Wanderers in 1998. The United were 1-0 down going at half-time, and Sheringham thought that Andy Cole was at fault for the opposition's goal. Andy Cole took offence to this, and they haven't spoken since, which is phenomenal considering what we're going to learn in a minute. That year, he scored his first hat-trick for us in European competition away to Feyenoord, and also was runner-up in the PFA Players Player of the Year. And the winner was Dennis Bergkamp, so I mean, Andy Cole can't complain at that. In all competitions, he was actually United's leading scorer with 25 goals, though he was omitted from the 1998 World Cup squad by then-England manager Glenn Hoddle, who says he's the type of striker that needs 5 chances to score a goal. That's a bit of harsh criticism, but it didn't let didn't get called out. The following season, this is where we get to the good stuff, boys. United signed Dwight York in the summer, and everybody thought he's going to be Cole's replacement. We've got Sheringham, we've got Solskjaer. Dwight York came in. How's Andy Cole going to get a game? Well, this is how we got a game. Dwight York and Andy Cole formed, for me, one of the best strike partnerships in the last 20 years. They were telepathic in their understanding with each other. They scored 53 goals between them, were key in our run in the Champions League and in the Premier League as well. For me, one of the goals that really sticks out in my mind was a goal at the Nou Camp they scored against Barcelona, where one dummied it, then the other dummied it, then they did two dummies, and it was just fantastic. It was amazing. Also on the run there, Andy Cole scored the winning goal in the Premier League season against Tottenham, which meant we finished a point ahead of Arsenal to win the league. And they also scored the third and winning goal in the Champions League semi-final against Juve, which put us through to the final, which was held at the Nou Camp. And we all know what happened there. We won the Champions League. Fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. The next season, obviously, how can you go on from such highs? Andy Cole, he was top scorer with 19 goals. He also collected his fourth Premier League medal. And it's basically another quality season from him. As the sort of years went on, the sort of 2000-2001 season, he had a lot of injury problems. He did still manage to score 13 goals. And he scored four in the European Cup that year as well, which meant he became Manchester United's all-time European goal scorer at the time. And he's made one last appearance for us after he left the club, and that was in a UEFA celebration match. It was a Manchester United 11 against a European 11 in the 50th anniversary of the European Community and 50 years of Man United taking part in the European Cup as well. It was sold to Blackburn in the 2001-2002 season after their rival Ruud van Nistelrooy, who basically took his place. It didn't really work well together. Cole's actually said the reason it didn't work well together is because they were both two similar types of players. So he was moved on for £8 million, which is quite a hefty fee at the time as well, to Blackburn Rovers. And he won a League Cup with Blackburn as well. After a couple of years there, he also teamed up with Dwight York, who moved to Blackburn in July 2002. But the 2003-04 season, it was a bit frustrating for him. His relationship with Graham Souness soured a little bit. He was then moved on to Fulham. He had a little bit of a successful season with them, but then again decided to leave the club after one season because his family wanted to move up, back up to the Manchester area. Then he signed for Manchester City on a free transfer, played 22 games for them, scored 9 goals, then moved on to Portsmouth after a season, who then loaned him out to Birmingham. Then he played at Sunderland again, with whom he teamed up with Dwight York once more, under the tutelage of Roy Keane. He was then loaned out to Burnley, who we'll be hearing about later, and finished his career at hometown club Nottingham Forest, where he managed 10 games, didn't score a goal though, and announced his retirement on the 11th of November 2008. Since his retirement, he's went on to become a coach. He's helped Paul Ince at MK Dons, he was a striking coach there. Currently he helps out Huddersfield Town, he's a striking coach there. It's his ex-Newcastle and Fulham teammate Lee Clark. It also writes a column for The Independent. Funnily enough, it's called the Andy Cole column. So there you go, and lets us know everything. I just what he thinks about football, so that happens once a week as well. In 1989, you'll love this, he actually released a single called Outstanding. It never reached the top 40, but I've got a treat for you. Here's a little snippet of it. Come on. Yeah. Andy Cole, break it down. Tell the world my name. Who's that Andy Cole? I blaze the scene. Score the goals. Keep my eyes on the prize. My inspiration. To celebrate life. To rock the nation. Gather round. Get close to me. Here's the VIP to my private party. The host with the most got clientele. Guaranteed to rock the mic well. Can I kick it? Yes, you can. A summertime rhyme and a party jam. Chop like a razor. Speed to amaze ya. Beat you like Ollie. Did your razor. I reminisce back to the schoolyard. I used to work hard. I used to play hard. Got my kicks from hitting the net. Not from drops. You bet we're outstanding. There you go. Who knows? Who knew Andy Cole could rap? He also does a lot of charity work as well. He set up a foundation in Zimbabwe. And and all his proceeds actually from the Colony Rights for the Independent goes to charity as well. A glittering career, and has won 5 Premier Leagues, 2 FA Cups, the Community Shield twice, Champions League, European, the Intercontinental Cup, and it was a runner-up in the European Super Cup as well. He was a great player. Have you two got any memories of Andrew Cole?
I think the 5 goals is the big thing that stands out for me, for Andy Cole. You mentioned the Barcelona goal as well, that was special. Grabbing a goal in the Juventus game as well that put us through to the final was obviously a massive highlight as well. What about you, Dan?
The goal in 99 when we beat Tottenham at home to win the league. I think he came off the bench that day, actually, and it was his first and second touch. Knocked it over Ian Walker, and the crowd went mental. And it was brilliant to be there on that day.
It was great stuff. Well, Andy Cole is certainly a legend at the club, definitely. And next week, I've got a treat for you even more. I had to do Andy Cole, and I could not do... could not do his strike partner. So next week you'll have a treat. You'll have Dwight York as your legend.
You're listening to the redcafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net or alternatively post your opinion on the redcafe.net forums.
Well, it's the moment you've been waiting for. It's the very first edition of the CAF Countdown. Dan, take it away.
Today we have Eric Hu on the redcafe.net podcast CAF Countdown. He's going to be our first contestant. Okay, you have 1 minute to answer as many questions as you can. Start the clock. What is the name of the road which runs past the front entrance of Old Trafford?
Matt Busby Way.
Which Swede did Alex Ferguson sign from Parma in the summer of 1998?
Okay. Sweet, Bonquist.
Which former Red was nicknamed El Beetle?
George Best.
Against which team did David Beckham score from his own half?
Wimbledon.
During the 99-2000 season, who opened the scoring for Fiorentina at Old Trafford?
Against who?
Fiorentina.
Was it Baptiste Tutor?
With which club did David Beckham spend a brief loan spell in 1994-95 season?
Preston.
In which match did United change their strip at half-time in the 95-96 season?
Against Southampton.
You did very well there. You got them all right. You got 7. So you got 7 answered in a minute. That's very...
Bit embarrassed about the Blomqvist one. Should know that as a noggy, but...
Well, which answer did you go for first? I can't remember now which one. You said Veron, didn't you?
Yeah, I don't know why I said that. I just thought...
No, it's all right. No, very well. You got 7... 7 out of the 7 that you answered, so well done.
Cheers.
Well, that was Eric Hu from the redcafe.net forum. Thank you very much, Eric Hu.
Cheers.
Well, what a fantastic start to the CAF Countdown. Eric Hu came on and got 7 out of 7, but if you fancy your chances of having a go and sign up now on the redcafe.net forum, or alternatively email us at podcast@redcafe.net.
You're listening to the redcafe.net podcast.
Well, everybody, it's that time of the show again where we get an opposition fan on the redcafe.net podcast. And this week we have Tony Scholes from the website claretsmad.co.uk. Tony, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. Hiding behind all the snow in Burnley, but ready for Saturday, I think.
You ready?
I think so.
We'll get right into it. Before we talk about the game, I just want to sort of get the context and stuff that's going around at the club there. You've just lost your manager, Owen Coyle, who has been quite a magnificent success for you, to be honest. How he's dealing with the sudden loss of such a quality manager?
Oh, it's been a strange one, because I think you probably know that Owen Coyle was considered to be God in Burnley and after what he'd achieved, but... The fans have really turned against him because he's lied to us. We can see now he's been nothing but a sham. And to be quite honest, I think the club's better off without him. The problem is he's left us right at the start of the transfer window. This week we found he's taking his entire backroom staff with him. So we've no coaches, no manager, no anything at the moment. And we've been run by the youth staff at this present time, although hopefully we'll have a manager in before weekend.
That'd be all right. I just want to ask you as well. I mean, a lot of people have been saying it's a kind of sideways move for Coyle. What's your opinion on that? Do you think it's a step up, down, or same level?
I think he's gone down. But there again, I'm a Burnley supporter.
You would say that.
I mean, we know Bolton are more established in the Premier League. And therefore, you know, as you probably know yourself, the longer you're in the Premier League, the more opportunities you have to build your club up and financially, etc., etc. And we're in our first year there, and Bolton have been there for 9 years. So, yeah, they're ahead of us in that sense. But they're not a bigger club than Burnley.
Interesting stuff. And so you just sort of touched on, you think you'll have a manager in time for the weekend. Who do you think that'll be, or who would you want it to be?
Who would I want it to be?
Who would you want it to be, and who do you think it'll
be? Jose Mourinho, I suppose, someone, but it's not going to be, is it? I don't know. We've been linked. I think we've been linked with a few, but they're from lower divisions at the moment. Personally, I'd like to see someone come in who's got a little bit of Premier League experience. Because I just think, you know, we've a chance of staying up yet. And maybe an Alan Kirbishley or a Steve Coppell or something like that.
What about Gary Megson?
I wouldn't say. He's not inspirational, is he, Gary Megson? But, yeah, he's been there and done it, and he's got the badge. And I think that's what we need at the moment.
Interesting stuff. We'll get on to the game at the weekend. Just want to talk about your players. So who are your main danger men? I mean, you signed one player you've signed to say, Steve Fletcher, who you signed from Hibs. I go and watch Hibernian quite a lot, being in Edinburgh. And I wasn't really impressed with him last season, if I'm going to be honest. But he seems to have settled in quite well at Turf Moor. I mean, what are your opinions on him, and who are your other sort of main dangers?
Right, well, Stephen Fletcher started the season really playing on the right-hand side. We play like a 4-5-1 system on the coil, and he was playing on the right-hand side, and to be quite honest, I wonder what the hell we bought. But we switched the system in October, and he's now playing as a central striker, and I'm impressed with him. He's looking like a good buy to me. I think he's done really well. Obviously, the United fans will be wondering about Chris Eagles. You probably know just as well as I do now that Chris Eagles is not the most reliable player. He has his good games and his bad games, but when he plays well, he's dangerous. And then in terms of it going forward, there's the likes of Robbie Blake and Wade Elliott as well.
And do you think you could repeat the shock victory that he's got at Turf Moor earlier on in the season at Old Trafford, bearing in mind that you haven't won away from home this season yet?
Well, you thought it was a shock, didn't you, when we beat you?
I did, yes.
Yes, so did we, if we're being honest. You just don't know. And I was talking to a friend of mine today, and he's been saying all season that just you watch the first away when we'll come at Old Trafford. But we're aware how difficult it is. You know, we're talking one of the biggest clubs in the world that we're having to go and play. So we're aware how difficult it is. But who knows? It's 11 against the 11, isn't it, on the day, and things can happen.
Yeah, we're not on particularly good form at the minute either. So if there's any time you want to play us, it'll probably be around about now.
Yeah. Yeah, but United not on form is still, you know, a quality side, and I look at the lineup that they're likely to put out, and there's some quality footballers there, and you know, and we're playing in front of the 75,000 plus, and it's a big day for us.
Indeed, so talking about United players, a hypothetical question for you, Tony: if you could have one United player. Okay,
yep.
Money is no object. Who would it be?
I don't have to hesitate. It's Wayne Rooney.
Everybody says that.
It's got to be. It's class, isn't it? It's a class act. When United played at Burnley, I think he and Giggs were the two best players. And, it would be Rooney. He's world class.
He's a fantastic player. And just before we let you go, Tony, can I get a prediction out of you? Please.
Yeah, we'll win. I was looking, actually, the last time I was at Old Trafford, of course, was the last time we played. Well, no, I was there for a League Cup game in the 80s, but the last time I saw a league game there was 75-76, and we lost that game 2-1. But I've never seen us win at Old Trafford, and I've been quite a few times. So, yeah, come on, we'll do the double and beat you 1-0.
Don't say that.
With a new manager, well, maybe with a new manager in place, but if it's not a new manager, it'll be Martin Dobson in charge. who's a Burnley legend. So wouldn't it be fantastic if we came with Martin Dobson in charge and beat United 1-0?
It'd be fantastic for you, but I don't know about fantastic for me. I'd actually start getting depressed.
Fantastic for football and romantic. It would be really nice.
I'll let you have that one. But Tony, it has been excellent having you on the show. A lovely insight into Burnley Football Club. Tony is the editor of claretsmad.co.uk, so if you want to go on that and have a little read about what's happening at Burnley, you're more than welcome to do so. But Tony, thank you very much for coming on the Red Cafe.net podcast.
You're welcome. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Well, that was the view of our opposition fan for this week. Guys, what do we think? Burnley at home, considering they've just lost their manager, they're going to be surely affected by that. So, Dan, that should really play into our hands, shouldn't it?
Let's be honest. Burnley at home, we've got to be winning that game at least 3 or 4-0, in my opinion. It could be the time where we start to click again. I know we played fairly well against Wigan and scored 5 goals that night. I can see it being a similar sort of game if we get a nice early goal. But players have got to perform, and you know, Burnley will be heartened by what Leeds did to us last week. They've obviously got a chance, but I think if we come out of the traps fast, we should be fine and beating Burnley. I think Rooney will grab a brace, and I think Anderson will score a goal if he plays.
So Dan, in terms of a scoreline, would that be what, 3-0, 4-0?
I'd go safe and play 3-0.
Dolph, agree with that?
Yeah, I'm going to echo Dan's sentiments completely. I think this should be the game where we come up trumps. We've got to address the rot right now, and I think there's no better time, especially with the fact they've lost their manager, and we should be getting 2 or 3 goals. We need 2 or 3 goals.
Dan, surely we've got to revert back to 4-4-2 at home, even if Berbatov, say, is injured. Michael Owen should come in, if not Mami Diouf, maybe, to get a start.
No, it's too early for Diouf to start, surely. Well, you never know with Ferguson, he'll probably spring a surprise, but I'd like to see Owen start. Owen and Rooney up front, 4-4-2, Valencia, and I'd love to see Nani get a game, but that's not going to happen either. So I think he'll probably stick with Giggs, so he might even go with Park again on the left-hand side. But yeah, definitely 4-4-2. We've got to attack teams like Burnley.
Okay, well, that's just about it for episode 23 of the RedCafe.net podcast. Remember, go on the RedCafe.net forum and get signed up to the CAF countdown. Join us on the Facebook group too if you haven't done that, and you can email us with any comments, questions or feedback that you might have. Podcast@redcafe.net is the address. So thanks a lot for listening, and tune in again next week.